We know that dogs catch bad guys, police dogs, drug-sniffing dogs. But did you know that through an emerging field called veterinary forensics, dogs and cats help crack horrific crimes, including murder and rape, by doing nothing more than being at the scene? Now, some of this might be squirm-inducing to hear, especially if you are dining, but it is important new science. And we do want to hear more from Vicky Croak, who weighs in on the animal world for Here and Now. And Vicky, we recently talked with someone from the National Fish and Wildlife Forensics Lab. Now, they track crimes against animals. You're talking about animals helping track crimes against humans. We're only going to say it once, but it's kind of a kiddie CSI.
That's right. It kind of is. We have lots of pets in this country, maybe 80 million dogs and 96 million cats. And that means a lot of fur containing an animal's genetic signature, their DNA, which is carried to and away from crime scenes. And even a single dog or cat hair can act like a department store tag, which can tie criminals to the crimes they've committed. The hair of a murder victim's pet may cling to the murderer's clothing, or the hair of the murderer's pet could end up in the victim's clothing. And people in law enforcement have realized, hey, you know what? Here's a good opportunity to grab some physical evidence. And scientists have realized that they can make a huge contribution, in some cases providing really critical physical links between the crime and the criminal.
And it's not just hair, and this is the part where, you know, you maybe don't want to be dining, but it's, you know, feces and saliva and the stuff that animals just leave everywhere. So give us an example.
There are some amazing stories, Robin. At the top of the list for me would be a triple homicide from Indiana in 2000, in which a trigger man was convicted in part because of the dog dew he stepped in when committing the crime. It turns out that waste grabs epithelial cells from the colon on the way out.
Okay.
So DNA from dog feces can be matched to an individual dog. And in this case, the perpetrator's soiled Nike sneakers carried the genetic signature of the dog who lived at the house where the murders were committed. And that connected him to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, he couldn't not say, I was never there, I didn't know anyone there, I've never been in that area. He was.
Exactly right. And there are other many cases like that. I mean, there was an attempted sexual assault case in Iowa in 1999 that was solved largely because of dog urine. Though the victim herself couldn't positively identify her assailant, her dog could by having lifted his leg on the tire of the man's truck. So DNA matching, again, placed that perpetrator at the scene of the crime.
Yeah, his tire got tested.
That's right.
Wow.
And in another case, this one from Kansas City, a murderer who nearly decapitated his victim was nailed in large part because of one single cat hair found in the turned-out pockets of the dead man. The pockets that the murderer had rummaged through held one cat hair that could be linked through DNA to the cats at the suspect's home.
It was so fascinating. How does it work? We know about human DNA evidence. Is this the same?
It is basically the same. And these scientists have to do two things. First, the crime scene DNA is profiled or analyzed. And then the lab needs to calculate probability. How common is this particular pattern of DNA in the wider population? In other words, how likely is it that this hair could have come from any other dog or cat than the one linking the criminal to the crime? In the triple murder case we were talking about, the probability that the feces on the suspect's sneaker came from any other dog than the one at the scene of the crime was 1 in 10 billion. And I spoke with the director of the lab that did that work. She's Elizabeth Wickham, and she's been doing this kind of analysis at the Veterinary Genetics Laboratory at UC Davis for 15 years. That's the only lab in the world accredited by the American Society of Crime Lab Directors to do such DNA testing on cats and dogs and human crimes. And she explained why the testing is so similar.
People are always amazed that we can do the same thing in animals, but, you know, if you think about it, people are just another species. And so all those tools that they use on humans, we can also use on animals.
Well, it sort of makes sense because we're all species. So why has it taken so long to take advantage of this?
There are probably a couple of factors that are involved. The word hasn't gotten out there entirely to police and prosecutors. And also, on average, evidence going through victims' lab costs about $2,000. Normally, law enforcement agencies get DNA work, human DNA work, done for free through their own state labs. So those government labs are not set up for animal DNA. And sometimes there just isn't enough money in the budget for it.
Yeah. Well, and also, as you said, this is new. The first murder case in which animal DNA was presented in court, you tell us, was back in 1996. How so?
It's another incredible case, Robin. A woman in Prince Edward Island in Canada was murdered by her common-law husband, and there was very little physical evidence to tie the guy to the crime, except that the officer in the case, Constable Roger Savoy, thought the white hair on a bloodied jacket looked an awful lot like the hair of the suspect's cat, Snowball.
Okay.
The constable needed help, and he turned to a pretty surprising source, Dr. Stephen O'Brien, who was then the head of the lab at the National Cancer Institute here in the U.S. That's a prestigious medical organization for humans, but Dr. O'Brien also happened to be studying domestic cats as a model for human hereditary diseases. I spoke with Dr. O'Brien, who's a pretty colorful storyteller, by the way, and he explained what happened when the constable asked his own lab to test the cat hair.
So he immediately called the DNA forensics lab at Halifax, and he said, we need to type these hairs and get a DNA profile of the cat, because I think I know who the cat was. And there was a reaction of incredulity from the forensic people who says, what are you talking about? This is a human DNA homicide operation. We don't do cats or dogs or aardvarks or anything else. We just work on humans. So Constable Savoy was very frustrated.
Dr. O'Brien there, again from the National Cancer Institute. So a frustrated Constable Savoy turned to him.
That's right. It was a really odd partnership, but it worked. Dr. O'Brien and his team, they analyzed the cat hair on the jacket, they analyzed Snowball's DNA, and then they also analyzed the DNA of 20 neighborhood cats so they could calculate that all-important probability of the match. After Dr. O'Brien and his team testified in Canadian court, the accused was found guilty and sentenced to 18 years in prison. Everyone in this field knows the famous story of the Snowball case, and this field being veterinary forensics, which has grown a great deal since then.
Yeah. Yay, Snowball.
Right.
But, you know, we laugh, but it's a very serious, this is a very serious subject. You're talking about murders and rapes and on the human level. But this kind of forensics, we talked about the lab in Oregon, should also help animals.
That's right. The other two big uses for this kind of forensics work is for catching poachers and also animal abusers. And it's really a field that's growing so rapidly that one expert I spoke with, Dr. Martha Smith Blackmore, she told me that she was practicing it even before it had a name. It wasn't taught in vet schools when she was getting her degree in the mid-1990s, but Dr. Smith today teaches veterinary forensics at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts. And there are all kinds of advances in the field. Dog and cat DNA databases have been established here and in England and are used by our law enforcement and even Scotland Yard. And there's a master's degree program for veterinary forensics at the University of Florida. And Dr. Smith was one of the scientists who established the International Veterinary Forensic Sciences Association in 2008. And that's a group with 130 members in 16 countries. And I spoke with Dr. Smith about all this, and she really does evoke the notion of animal CSI.
The nice thing about the formalization of veterinary forensics is that more and more veterinarians are joining the Academy of Forensic Sciences. So we are starting to cross-pollinate with the anthropologists and the forensic odontologists and the entomologists. So we're sharing our science and learning from their science.
And Vicki Croak, for those saying, well, yeah, but how often can this work? How often do they guess this has worked?
Elizabeth Wickham figures her lab alone has been involved in something like 500 human crime cases. And when you factor in the other experts like entomologists, the bug guys who often help determine time of death, we're counting in the thousands, a number that will only keep growing.
Wow. So the next time you get up in your nice black pantsuit and you're covered with cat hair, or your cat drools all over you, or your dog, you know, makes a mistake, it could be crime solving.
That's right. Say thank you.
Yeah. And we always do to our pets. Vicki Croak, who covers all things animal for Here and Now. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.